Chapter 7. Old Narnia in Danger. The place where they had met the fauns was, of course, Dancing Lawn itself, and here Caspian and his friends remained till the night of the Great Council. To sleep under the stars, to drink nothing but well water, and to live chiefly on nuts and wild fruit was a strange experience for Caspian after his bed with silken sheets in a tapestried chamber at the castle, with meals laid out on gold and silver dishes in the anteroom, and attendants ready at his call. But he had never enjoyed himself more. Never had sleep been more refreshing, nor food tasted more savoury, and he began already to harden, and his face wore a kinglier look. When the great night came, and his various strange subjects came stealing into the lawn by ones and twos and threes, or by sixes and sevens, the moon then shining almost at her full, his heart swelled as he saw their numbers and heard their greetings. All whom he had met were there. Bulgy bears, and red dwarfs and black dwarfs, moles and badgers, hares and hedgehogs, and others whom he had not yet seen. Five satyrs as red as foxes, the whole contingent of talking mice, armed to the teeth and following a shrill trumpet, some owls, the old raven of Ravenscore. Last of all, and this took Caspian's breath away, with the centaurs came a small but genuine giant, Wimbleweather of Dead Man's Hill, carrying on his back a basketful of rather seasick dwarfs, who had accepted his offer of a lift and were now wishing they had walked instead. The bulgy bears were very anxious to have the feast first and leave the council till afterwards, perhaps till tomorrow. Reepicheep and his mice said that councils and feasts could both wait, and proposed storming Miraz in his own castle that very night. Pattertwig and the other squirrels said they could talk and eat at the same time, so why not have the council and feast all at once? The moles proposed throwing up entrenchments round the lawn before they did anything else. The fauns thought it would be better to begin with a solemn dance. The old raven, while agreeing with the bears that it would take too long to have a full council before supper, begged to be allowed to give a brief address to the whole company. But Caspian and the centaurs and the dwarfs overruled all these suggestions and insisted on holding a real council of war at once. When all the other creatures had been persuaded to sit down quietly in a great circle, and when, with more difficulty, they had got Pattertwig to stop running to and fro and saying, "Silence, silence, everyone, for the king's speech!" Caspian, feeling a little nervous, got up. "Narnians," he began, but he never got any further, for at that very moment Camillo the hare said, "Hush, there's a man somewhere near." They were all creatures of the wild, accustomed to being hunted, and they all became still as statues. The beasts all turned their noses in the direction which Camillo had indicated. "Smells like a man, and yet not quite like man," whispered Truffle Hunter. "It's getting steadily nearer," said Camillo. "Two badgers, and you three dwarfs, with your bows at the ready, go softly off to meet it," said Caspian. "We'll settle 'en," said a black dwarf grimly, fitting a shaft to his bowstring. "Don't shoot if it is alone," said Caspian. "Catch it."
"Why?" asked the dwarf.
"Do as you're told," said Glenstorm the centaur.
Everyone waited in silence while the three dwarfs and two badgers trotted stealthily across to the trees on the northwest side of the lawn. Then came a sharp dwarfish cry.
"Stop! Who goes there?"
And a sudden spring. A moment later, a voice which Caspian knew well could be heard saying,
All right, I'm unarmed. Take my wrists if you like, worthy badgers, but don't bite right through them. I want to speak to the king."
"Dr. Cornelius!" cried Caspian with joy, and rushed forward to greet his old tutor. Everyone else crowded round.
"Pah!" said Nickerbrick, "a renegade dwarf for half an hour. Shall I pass my sword through its throat?"
"Be quiet, Nickerbrick," said Trumpkin. "The creature can't help its ancestry."
"This is my greatest friend and the saviour of my life," said Caspian, "and anyone who doesn't like his company may leave my army at once."
dearest Doctor, I am glad to see you again. However did you find us out?
By a little use of simple magic, Your Majesty, said the Doctor, who was still puffing and blowing from having walked so fast. But there's no time to go into that now. We must all fly from this place at once. You are already betrayed, and Miraz is on the move. Before midday tomorrow, you will be surrounded.
Betrayed? Said Caspian. And by whom? Another renegade dwarf, no doubt, said Nicobrick.
By your horse, Destria, said Dr. Cornelius. The poor brute knew no better. When you were knocked off, of course, he went dawdling back to his stable in the castle. Then the secret of your flight was known. I made myself scarce, having no wish to be questioned about it in Miraz's torture chamber. I had a pretty good guess from my crystal as to where I should find you. But all day, that was the day before yesterday, I saw Miraz's tracking parties out in the woods. Yesterday I learned that his army is out. I don't think some of your pure-blooded dwarfs have as much woodcraft as might be expected. You've left tracks all over the place. Great carelessness. At any rate, something has warned Miraz that old Narnia is not so dead as he had hoped, and he is on the move.
Hooray! Said a very shrill and small voice from somewhere at the Doctor's feet. Let them come. All I ask is that the King will put me and my people in the front.
What on earth? Said Dr. Cornelius. Has Your Majesty got grasshoppers or mosquitoes in your army?
Then, after stooping down and peering carefully through his spectacles, he broke into a laugh.
By the lion, he swore. It's a mouse. Senior Mouse, I desire your better acquaintance. I am honoured by meeting so valiant a beast.
My friendship you shall have, learned man, piped Reepy Cheep. And any dwarf or giant in the army who does not give you good language shall have my sword to reckon with.
Is there time for this foolery? Asked Nicobrick. What are our plans, battle or flight?
Battle, if need be, said Trumpkin. But we are hardly ready for it yet, and this is no very defensible place.
I don't like the idea of running away, said Caspian.
Hear him! Hear him! Said the bulgy bears. Whatever we do, don't let's have any running. Especially not before supper, and not too soon after it, neither.
Those who run first do not always run last, said the centaur. And why should we let the enemy choose our position instead of choosing it ourselves? Let us find a strong place.
That's wise, Your Majesty, that's wise, said Truffle Hunter.
But where are we to go? Asked several voices.
Your Majesty, said Dr. Cornelius, and all you variety of creatures. I think we must fly east and down the river to the great woods. The Telmarines hate that region. They've always been afraid of the sea and of something that may come over the sea. That is why they have let the great woods grow up. If traditions speak true, the ancient Cair Paravel was at the river mouth. All that part is friendly to us and hateful to our enemies. We must go to Aslan's How.
Aslan's How, said several voices. We do not know what it is.
It lies within the skirts of the great woods, and it is a huge mound which Narnians raised in very ancient times over a very magical place, where there stood, and perhaps still stands, a very magical stone. The mound is all hollowed out within into galleries and caves, and the stone is in the central cave of all. There is room in the mound for all our stores, and those of us who have most need of cover and are most accustomed to underground life can be lodged in the caves. The rest of us can lie in the wood. At a pinch, all of us, except this worthy giant, could retreat into the mound itself, and there we should be beyond the reach of every danger except famine.
It is a good thing we have a learned man among us, said Truffle Hunter, but Trumpkin muttered under his breath.
Soup and celery. I wish our leaders would think less about these old wives' tales and more about victuals and arms.
But all approved of Cornelius's proposal, and that very night, half an hour later, they were on the march. Before sunrise, they arrived at Aslan's How.